You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey, and welcome to Gilbert in Detroit. This is Gilbert Higuera, and I am ready to talk to you about what a lot of people really want to know about the history of Detroit as we are entering a renaissance right now, a new renaissance, a new change in how things are happening in the city, and that people want to come back to the city. It's not easy to separate yourself from maybe a suburban lifestyle or a suburban life that you grew up in, but you see and you kind of notice the excitement of the city, really any city, but I'm going to concentrate on the city of Detroit because Detroit has a lot of great history, a lot of great history that a lot of suburbanites feel but don't really embrace. They don't really get it. Luckily, that's changing. In my lifetime, it has always been a case where we've been an anomaly. People would say, "Where are you from?" And you'd say, "From Detroit." And then they'd say, "Oh, have you been downtown?" And the person usually responds with, "Oh, no, I wouldn't go there at all." And yet, for the region, we have this pride. We understand that the automobile was something spectacular for the world. It was something that brought a mobility to people that never existed in all of history. And so we feel that pride, and yet a lot of you don't really know what it stems from. How did it happen? And if we're going to be here to watch a new renaissance, because we had a renaissance in the 70s with Henry Ford II and the Renaissance Center, and they called it the city's renaissance, and it never really took off. So there may be some doubt in some of your minds that this one will take off this time. And that's absolutely understandable. So my perspective is that we have to look at what built it in the first place. If we don't know what built the city in the first place, we're not going to know what to do to build it again. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding and misdirection going on, that if we go down those wrong paths, we're going to make the same mistakes again. However, if we know what happened the first time around, what the dangers were, who were the impediments, or what were the impediments versus what were the situations, that made it possible. What was the environment like? What was the economic and political environment like? If we understand that, then we're going to understand how to do it again this time, how to do it right this time. And it's not necessary that we become history geeks, although I am one and I love history. And I think you would love history if you have a good teacher, if you have somebody that engages the past in a way that makes it come alive, then you're going to really enjoy learning about what happened and how it happened. And I'm going to enjoy it, learning it, and then passing it on to you, because I really do enjoy that. And hopefully that'll come through as you listen to this. Detroit came up from nowhere to be the Motor City. It could have been any other city. Why wasn't it New York? Why wasn't it Chicago? Why wasn't it Indianapolis? Those are important questions to ask yourself. What was happening here that made this the Motor City? Were there things going on here that were different from somewhere else? Or were other places just as innovative and just as entrepreneurial and just as industrial as Detroit? If we look into the history and see what was going on at the turn of the 20th century, the 19th through the 20th century, this was an exciting place to be. This was a fantastic place to be. And it made a lot of sense for people to be here originally, even before that, because of the location militarily. When the French arrived, right on the Straits of Detroit, Detroit, on the Straits. The location is a factor, but again, as far as manufacturing, why wasn't it Chicago? Chicago arguably could have been a better place. St. Louis could have been a better place, right in the center of the country. Why wasn't St. Louis the center of industry? But Detroit is. Detroit was. And it could be again. And we can look at things now and say, well, you know, industry is fading. It's going off to the Far East. Or it's just becoming non-existent with new technology. But I wouldn't argue that point. Because in the end, we still need to have a community. We still need to have things built. No matter how easy it is to build things now, much easier than before, much faster than before. In the end, we still need to have people that are making those things and building those things and providing them for them, providing them for us. Because it's nice to wallow in the fantasy of some of the new technology like 3D printing and saying that we're all going to be building and making everything that we own all on our own. But, well, if you have a pasta maker in your kitchen that you've never used or you used once, or the dehydrator, or any of the other wonderful products that Ron Pope Peel ever invented and brought to us, you understand. There's a division of labor for a reason, because we don't want to do all that stuff. And in a city, which is what human beings created spontaneously to provide the location for the division of labor, then you understand that's going to always be needed in some way, shape, or form. And if you're on, what, a space station and you're not manufacturing things there, those things are going to need to be manufactured somewhere. The physical things that you use are going to need to be manufactured somewhere and then brought to you. So obviously shipping is a big important factor. And yes, we have a lot of better shipping than we did before. But what I want to show you eventually is the unbelievable network of shipping that Detroit had and actually the country had. An unbelievably intricate level of shipping via rail that has been destroyed, that was destroyed, and I believe on purpose. I'll have to make my case. You don't have to believe me right now. You can say, oh, he's crazy. But there'll be a case for it. And this is one of the topics that we'll touch on. We'll touch on that. We'll touch on the history of the people who came here, what they were coming here for, what they were coming to do, how they succeeded, and maybe even how they failed. Because this is an ongoing project for me. I'm still looking. I'm still discovering. So if you have any information, I'd love to hear from you. If you have any great historical stories surrounding the city of Detroit, I'd love to hear from you. Because together, then we can weave this story together and make discoveries that will, again, allow us to make this Renaissance the one that sticks. That's what's really important. Because if we're all moving to a city to enjoy the benefits of city life, we have to know what those benefits are. And there's too many people in the population who just have no idea what the benefits of city life can be. And as we, you know, have our different desires and dreams, we may not know that, hey, being in a city might be the best place for those dreams to come true. We're seeing it with a lot of the artists coming to the city. Yes, you can go out into the woods and paint but you're all alone up there. Yes, you can go out into the woods and write, but eventually you have to share those writings with somebody. And that's what a city allows, is that interaction with lots and lots of people. Lots and lots of people that couldn't care less about what you're doing, but then lots and lots of people who really do. And we think we found that sort of community on the internet, but really, if you don't physically meet with people, if you don't physically talk to people, if you don't physically share with people in the real world, then what is life about? You might as well be a spirit. And if we are spiritual beings having a physical experience, as some people say, shouldn't we be having those physical experiences? Shouldn't we be seeking those out? And if we're here to maximize our potential, where is the best place to do that? In some cases, obviously, yeah, you want to get away for creative purposes, to get away from all the noise, to get closer to nature, absolutely. But in other cases, you need the stimulus of other people, not because they're going to create with you or for you, but because they're going to inspire you and remind you why you're doing it. To share this with the world, with other people in your community. So these are some of the topics that I want to delve into that seem so unrelated to each other. And yet together, they make community, they make life on earth enjoyable. And for too long, life in Detroit has not been enjoyable. It's been marred. It was marred and has been marred so many times, even from the beginning, even from the times when it was still growing. There were those characters and those individuals that weren't there to help produce, but to control or to minimize or in some way destroy what the producers were producing, or to take from it, to skim. And when you have people skimming, because it's always other human beings, it's not like it's magic. It's always some other human beings deciding that they don't need to produce, they just need to control the producers. They just need to direct the producers. They need to make decisions and rules that the makers and the doers run under. And yet it was in the absence of so many of the rules that we live under today that made this city great. And I'm hoping that in the process of examining the history and some of the people that came here and what they came here to do and how they lived, that we discover another truth that may escape you or more likely purposefully have been, inculcated in you, just that things are better than they ever were. And in all of history, that's never the case. Or it's not never the case, but obviously times get better than before. But it is a rise and a fall. We can forget. We can lose technology. We can lose knowledge and have to rediscover it again. We can lose technology and have to rediscover it again. And that's a terrible place to be. To rehash what was already known, to rebuild what was already built. And we see this in the city today. It looks like a war zone in many parts, and that's deeply saddening to me. I love the old architecture. I love the old buildings. And in some cases, we see some sort of rebirth of those cities, of those buildings, and in other cities that's happening too. And yet it comes with this sort of, well, you got to rebuild it the modern way. So you have to gut it and destroy everything of character inside in order to modernize it. Because, of course, those idiots back then didn't know how to build a building. And we know that that's not true. If you've ever toured an old building, an old home, you see not only the advancement of architecture, of better architecture, better design, but better craftsmanship, better artistry. And nothing that they've done, and maybe that's a slight exaggeration, in the last 30, 40 years can match that. I've seen million-dollar homes that make me want to laugh. Are you kidding me? It looks like white square boxes that I'm stepping into. White square boxes with marble over here. White square boxes with some stone over here. And yet the walls are made of what I call paper. How on earth can you equate paper walls? Yeah, drywall. Paper walls with plaster. There's no way. There's no way to equate those two. And yet you can have $1 million home, and anybody in the next room is clearly heard because of the paper walls. The house isn't solid. You don't even get a sense of it being solid, even with all that stone or marble or tile. Why not? Because it's not. All you have to do is tap on the wall. And then you go into a little bungalow built in 1935 in Detroit, and there's 100 times more character, 100 times more sense of a solid home, little details that remind you that artisans were there, even if they were common, construction workers. There was something that they offered. Or maybe they brought in artisans for those little details, the tile over here. And I know, and this isn't to disparage anybody that's in construction today that is an artist, that does take time to do the job right and make it look good and design something. You are the ones I'm calling to. You're the ones I want to rally. A lot of times in the old real estate bubbles, and we're probably coming out of one right now, people just build up anything. Or the rehabbers would rehab anything and replace stuff with cheap stuff to make it work financially without having to do the work of really be designers. But if we look at those old homes, again, just small bungalows, not to mention the mansions. How can you build a mansion today that even matches anything that was built here pre-1950? You can't. Or you don't. Really? You can't. Because all the dead Italian, old Italians, old Eastern Europeans, the Poles. Who are these magical artisans, these magical human beings that somehow knew how to plaster a wall, lay tile, paint in unique ways, the architects who could design intricate woodwork inside of a small bungalow that added a little bit of character and a little bit of life? Are we physically different than those human beings? Of course not. So why are we building this stuff? This stuff that's just white square walls. Oh, and well, I stand corrected. Yes, today it's gray square walls. That's what's in gray square walls. But you go into an old home and you've got colored tiles that are, in some cases, decorative. not all of them. I mean, obviously, economic levels and different price levels make a difference. And maybe it's only the mansions and the little, you know, they're mini mansions, only not in the obnoxious sense that term has gotten. They are mini. I mean, thousands of square feet on a nice small plot of land. And there you have like Puabic pottery, a Detroit icon that is still standing, still going strong. As far as I know, I believe they're still around. Last I checked, these things change so quickly sometimes you want to make sure. And those are the things that I think need to be promoted, need to be we need to be interested in what came before, especially if we're interested in those sorts of details. Especially if you're young and you want to come here to Detroit, or you're here to be entrepreneurial, don't you need to know what business is about? And if you know that, you know, let's say you're a rehabber, and your business is to rehab old properties, doesn't it make sense to know the difference between a pre-1950s classically built home and that post, you know, that mid-century modern horror, excuse me, I won't hide my distaste for mid-century modern, but if you want to live there, and obviously I work with anybody as far as, you know, as a real estate agent, whatever you want to buy, whatever you want to sell, because I'm here to serve you. But aesthetically, what can we do better? And if we're going to be building new homes, can't we return to some different standards? Can't we return to standards that were more artistic? And it doesn't mean that you sacrifice any sort of modern amenity. That doesn't mean that at all. Or a modern design, you know, layout, things like that. But at the same time, some of what we are missing personally, socially, community, were built in those homes. Whether it's the dining room or in the mini mansions, you know, the ballroom on the third floor. You had people coming over. You had cocktail parties. You had, you know, at that level. I know people that make a lot of money. They don't have cocktail parties. We've lost that sort of community. That sort of, well, this is entertainment, is to be with friends and acquaintances and business partners gathered together in my home. I'm inviting you into my home and look at it. It's a beautiful place. And I don't think that needs to be a mansion. It can be a small home. It can be your home. It can be a big home. It can be a small home. It doesn't matter. It doesn't need to be a tiny home, but because those are efficiency apartments. But hey, we might convince you all that you might want to live in, you know, a 3x5 card. Not my style. Anyways, I'm so glad that you're here to join me. I hope that in this process, we do get a chance to communicate, that I do get to interview people that are certainly much more knowledgeable than I am, people that are much more in the weeds, so to speak, doing the work, because that's really what's important, is to surround ourselves by the people that are doing it, discovering what the challenges are, and maybe we have to work together to dismantle some of the barriers and blockades that have been built over the decades so that we can once again have the Detroit that we think about when we are proud of where we come from or proud of where we decided to move to live or excited by the little bits of history that we learn here and there that say, oh, some very interesting and fascinating people lived here. Even the ones that we never know their names, they were living here. And they built what we have to rebuild. It's our time. It's our time to rebuild. It's our time to make it happen. And I hope you'll join me. This is Gilbert. Gilbert in Detroit. Thanks for listening.